Sir, the oxygen level is bottoming out in Sector G. What do you want me to do about it?
Don't do anything.
But they won't last an hour, sir.
Fuck them. Be a good lesson to the others.
Come on, Cohagan, you got what you want. Give this people air.
My friend, in 5 minutes, you won't give a shit about the people. Fire it up, Doc.
Pop culture meltdown.
Louis, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm fantastic.
I'm getting over my Thanksgiving food coma is what I'm doing.
I just threw all my Thanksgiving food out.
Did you?
Yeah, Tuesday, November 27th. Gone!
Really?
Yes.
Why do you even have leftovers? Oh, wait a minute.
Because I ate them already.
Oh.
And then after that, after Monday, it gets thrown out.
Oh, okay.
That's it. Got it. I got a question for you.
Yes.
Chicago, you're familiar?
I lived there for 3 years.
What is its nicknamed?
The Windy City.
Why?
Because of the Democratic National Convention. Because all the politicians would come to town, and it would be all the wind, you know, coming from their mouths as they were talking.
Well, not even close. They talk about it's because of the wind bags, and they're full of hot air. So I guess maybe you might be right.
All right, that's what I'm talking about. That's what I mean. The windbags and the politicians are windbags and they're hot air. Come on now.
I sit corrected.
Yes, you do. Sit corrected.
I'm
going to sit
corrected.
Now, we can get into a whole conversation now because you brought up Chicago.
Yes.
Are you a deep dish guy or are you a regular New York style pizza guy?
I am an equal opportunity.
I am just in the same boat as you.
I'm an
captain.
Guy. Yeah. Well, speaking of II captain, sad news today, but we'll celebrate it.
Are y'all ready, kids?
II captain.
I can't hear you.
Aye, aye, Captain.
Oh,
Louie.
Yep.
Who lives in a pineapple?
SpongeBob SquarePants, the creator.
Yeah.
Dead.
Succumbs to ALS.
ALS.
Right? Oh God.
SpongeBob.
Oh,
ALS.
Look who's here! Wait a minute. We have a visitor.
Bachelor.
We have a visitor.
Look
before,
at John Bachelor.
Before we commemorate the life of the creator of SpongeBob SquarePants,
yes,
we have to go to the Bowtie Bandit himself.
There he is.
Gentlemen,
Mr. Bachelor, we haven't talked to you in a while.
There's so much gossip about baseball. I've been out of touch with you.
It's a lot going on.
Good.
Congratulations,
heavens.
DeGrom, on the Cy Young.
Yes.
I know the DeGrom news seems like last year. Good heavens.
I
know.
Seriously, forget it.
Although it was last year.
Yeah.
Right, exactly.
At this point.
At this point, yes.
And we're deep into Hot Stove League. Rumor mill.
Oh, yeah. Donaldson got signed the other day.
Atlanta, Brian McCann went back to the Braves.
Yep.
Braves are the favorites in the NL East now, all of a sudden.
All right. It's in me to be immediately Mets-centered.
Okay. Right. Listen, I can't blame you.
Mr. Syndergaard.
Yes.
I need an opinion. Does he want to stay in New York?
I think he does.
I think he does.
I think he definitely wants to stay in New York.
Yeah.
I don't think he will be staying in New York.
I think he better stay in New York. I don't. Arms like his, arms like DeGrom, they come around once every 10, 12, 14.
But are they
12,
healthy? Yeah, are they healthy?
They're healthy.
Today, the rumor that the Giants are shopping Bumgarner.
That's
good
interesting.
I would trade for him.
At that scale, everybody's available.
Oh, I would agree. As long as you're not nailed down.
I mean, for heaven's sakes, Keuchel's ready to leave Houston, mm-hmm. a winner, and he's ready to go.
Yep.
So who's permanent?
I don't know.
Listen.
The name on the jersey on the front. That's about it.
Right.
Everybody else is changeable.
I mean, we've seen it before, and I've said it. Not on this podcast, but in just random sports conversation. If Wayne Gretzky can be traded, any athlete can be traded.
That's a good point.
It doesn't matter. We saw Herschel Walker go to the Minnesota Vikings and the Dallas Cowboys get a boatload of picks.
Mm-hmm.
They end up becoming a Super Bowl dynasty again in the 90s. Wayne Gretzky's traded to the LA Kings, the Edmonton Oilers. They win a cup without him, led by Mark Messier. Gretzky goes to California, plays for the Los Angeles Kings. What happens? All of a sudden, now hockey's fashionable in hot weather climates.
Oh, yeah.
So because Gretzky goes to California, now you have teams, more teams in California, teams in Texas, teams in southern regions like Florida and South Carolina and North Carolina.
And you gave Luc Robitaille a chance to get busy on the wing.
Of course. But I want Noah Syndergaard to stay. I don't want him to leave.
All right. Here's an argument against it.
Yes.
Stock market analogy. What they tell you is you buy the sizzle, not the steak.
Oh, I'm with you on that.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
When you have stars established on a team that is not winning, you cannot fill any more seats. You've got steak. You need sizzle. Moving the stars for the possibilities, for the dreams, that fills seats.
Yeah, for the old Brooklyn Dodgers, wait till next year.
Well, Yes, you but know. Standing pat does not sell any more tickets.
I know, but prospects are so hit or miss. If you could pull off what the Nationals did by, or not even so much pulling off what the Nationals did, but getting a guy in your system like a Juan Soto, mm-hmm. who comes in and is just amazing at such a young age, that's a can't-miss prospect. I don't want to see the Mets trade Noah Syndergaard like the way they acquired him. They acquire him for R.A. Dickey, an old arm. They get a couple of players
him
in return.
Him and Darno.
And here comes
Noah. Or he and Darno.
But Darno was supposed to be the jewel of that trade, and Syndergaard was just a hard-throwing arm. And now that trade looks like one of the most lopsided in Mets history for the better because of Thor.
But then again, the guy's no Tom Seaver. You know, I mean, he didn't, you know, who knows? Maybe he could be our Tom Seaver where he goes to, you know, San Diego.
No pitchers anymore.
More difficulty.
Yes.
Hot story.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
A man by the name of Corbin is said to be visiting Philadelphia. Perhaps mm-hmm. he didn't know that he had to move 100 miles north.
A quick
to visit New York.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
But in any event, lots of pitchers moving around.
Oh, yeah.
The Yankees get a star in Paxton.
Mm-hmm.
Fine. They want another arm. Is Corbin the arm? Do the Yankees need a third starter?
Yes.
And with Paxton, their prospects have been raised. I mean, they won 100 games without him.
Oh yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. That's what I mean about sizzle.
And a lot of it, I think, they lost in the beginning innings. You know, they do have the propensity to come back, but I don't know. I think it's going to be interesting.
For me, if the Yankees wanted Thor, I would honestly listen because of the way their prospects
are. Who
are
you going to get?
But it would have to be, I want Gleyber Torres.
Yes.
Or I want Andujar.
They just released Ronald Torres.
Not a problem.
Or whatever it is. Yeah.
You can have Bird. You can have Gray. We'll throw in.
No, I don't want Greg Bird. He's hurt too much.
And now, wait. Yes. There's more.
Yes.
For the Yankees, they have this possibility from the Diamondbacks. Paul Goldschmidt mm-hmm. and Zach Greinke in a package. Goldschmidt is a professional hitter.
And that's what, to the Yankees?
Yankees.
Do that tomorrow.
A professional hitter.
Could you imagine
that? Do that tomorrow. Give them
three,
whatever
four,
they want.
3, 4, 5, Goldschmidt,
Judge,
and then Stanton.
No, but then they move Stanton. They're talking about moving him. So who knows?
Oh, really?
It's such in flux right now that it
but
almost
Goldschmidt,
rivals.
Goldschmidt is not an ordinary hitter.
No.
Definitely not.
This is
he's,
a man.
He's otherworldly.
He doesn't strike out. He wins games by himself.
Mm-hmm.
And he fills the first base role for the Yankees. Mm-hmm. It would do for the Mets, too, but I don't think they're looking for first base. But the Yankees have an empty place at first base right now.
Oh, yeah.
They have a kid who's good. They have Bird who disappointed. Mm-hmm. They haven't filled that slot. And there are a lot of first basemen moving around.
Goldschmidt is amazing. I mean, you can't say enough amazing things about Goldschmidt. I follow this guy, Steve Springer. He does quality at-bats. He pretty much preaches on how to have a professional at-bat.
Oh, yeah.
And he's in contact with Goldschmidt all the time. Well, Goldschmidt is a 340 hitter.
Goldschmidt is very Frank
Thomas-esque. Very much so.
He's a guy who can hit 40 home runs, but he'll also hit 330, not strike out a lot, and won't embarrass himself in the field. You know what I mean? He's a first baseman who can just rake, mm-hmm. but he's got that Ted Williams-like eye where you know his on-base percentage is going to be high and his Ks are going to be low. Mm-hmm.
It is very difficult to talk about baseball because we have to wait so long.
Oh, mm-hmm. of course.
This is hard.
John Batchelor, you know what's probably not hard?
Mm.
Landing on Mars. Do you think that's hard?
Well, they've had successes that have misled us
into
how it is done.
They were talking about it yesterday. They said, if we don't know, we landed on Mars yesterday.
Right.
InSight?
InSight, yeah. I'm going to do a report. This is for seismic testing of the planet.
Yes.
Because you can learn a lot about the interior and its history by sending seismic waves through.
And essentially what they're going to do is they're going to drill into the core or into the Earth, whatever you want to call it, the Mars Earth.
Right.
And take back samples.
Right. The way we find oil or other mm-hmm. minerals. Yes.
Now, if this was an X-Files movie, they would take back the oil back to Earth. It would get infected into the humans, and the alien race would now be on Earth, transmitted through the oil that's on
Mars.
You're
already writing the next Hollywood movie, which would be Journey to the Center of Mars.
There it is.
To find the unknown peoples who live in the interior. Yes.
Unbelievable.
Explaining, in any event, the Mars news combined with two asteroid probes. Mm-hmm. We have one asteroid probe called OREX approaching now Bennu, and we have another European probe parked around another asteroid. We also have Ultima Thule, which is the binary object in the Kuiper Belt that we're going to fly by with New Horizon on January 1st, the space network is full up. We've got probes in all directions.
And also, it's important to note that when they're going by the asteroid, the gravity changes so much around that asteroid that it's almost impossible to gauge to land or to get something, because the asteroid is not, when it flies through space, it's not together. It's loose, correct?
Right.
It's not like a solid object.
Well, it's a very low gravity and the rubble holds itself together.
Mm-hmm.
And they've had difficulty finding a landing place for the European probe. But I think because OREX is, it's almost like taking a sample with a scoop. They're not actually going to land. They're going to poke down and grab a piece.
Okay.
And then grab another piece.
And then be out.
Put it in a return vehicle mm-hmm. and send it back to Earth. That's what they're going to do.
It's impressive.
Because of this landing difficulty that you identify.
Let me ask you this question. So yesterday, it's around 3:30, 3 o'clock, and
I thought of him immediately.
Channel 7 is on. ABC in New York. And this was the audio that I was watching. We're just going to play it real quickly, and I want you to tell me your initial thoughts.
Altitude convergence. The radar has locked on the ground.
Yes.
Standing by for lander separation.
Carrier interruption on Marco Alpha and Marco Bravo.
50 meters, constant velocity. 37 meters. 30 meters. 20 meters. 17 meters. Standing by for touchdown. Touchdown confirmed.
So, John Batchelor, take me through your emotions as you're watching that.
Neil Armstrong.
Yeah.
1969.
Exactly my point. Right. I don't think it's been since, God forbid, the Challenger. You know, obviously, we all saw that live. Horrible, horrible thing that it was.
Yep.
But exactly correct. When was the world watching, or the nation, whatever you want to call it, watching something so historic as landing on Mars?
Yeah, they did it very nicely.
It was beautiful.
Yeah.
It was absolutely beautiful. And it wasn't, you know, I kind of look at it almost like a sports event. When somebody wins the World Series, there's no moron announcer going, oh my God. They let the action.
Let the pictures tell the story.
Exactly.
Yeah, the delay there, because the events were, because the space network, there's a second, I don't know what the delay is from Mars. It's a few seconds, many seconds. Meaning the event had happened by the time we were able to announce it.
Right.
That was not necessarily the case on the moon. I don't remember what the split second. The moon landing was far more dangerous than what we just listened to. The facts of Armstrong. He landed without adequate fuel. He didn't have a safety margin when he landed, if I understand.
He just kind of winged it.
Well, he took over the craft because it was not giving him a landing spot that he was happy with. So he was moving around looking for something flat.
Wow.
They didn't know at the time whether the dust would
support it.
Would support it.
Exactly correct.
And they also knew they wanted to avoid boulders because they needed a flat platform to take off from. So he took over.
Amazing.
We have machines, robots, mm-hmm. that would do that now, but in 1969, no.
Right. But so you're comparing us landing on Mars yesterday to such a historic event as walking on the moon.
Yeah, that little robot that just landed on Mars.
It's amazing.
Neil Armstrong Jr.
And it's even more amazing is they have a quote-unquote dust shield that is over, because when they were sent back pictures, it kind of looked like your iPhone screen's dirty. You got to wash off that iPhone screen. So what's going to happen today, supposedly, is those will come down and we'll actually be able to get crystal clear pictures of the surface.
We got some big probes going into Mars. We're going to have a good year. 2020, we have two probes, the European probe and the American probe, mm-hmm. both rovers, landing in a roughly same part of Mars, sort mm-hmm. of the edges of what could have been the ocean or the inland sea once upon a time. And we're going to get used to driving around Mars over the next couple of years. Spectacular events.
Pretty amazing.
And we'll find mystery.
Yeah. I mean, I just hope we're not foolish.
Well, the Europeans want to know about possibility of fossils. That's what the Europeans
yep.
want.
Yep, very much so.
We want some information about these unexplained asymmetrical methane events that we've been noting for more than a decade.
Okay.
what look to be seasonal or periodic releases of methane. There are two sources of methane. One is volcanic.
I thought you were going somewhere else, Dan Bassler. Okay.
And the other is organic. What's wrong about what's been puzzling is that the releases are asymmetrical and seasonal. And that doesn't suggest that it's about the rocks. It suggests that it's something
in the atmosphere,
submartian.
Interesting.
That's releasing a minute but measurable methane. So the Europeans are looking to solve that, and so are we. There's been a recent explanation. I wish I could summarize. You didn't give me a chance to review beforehand. But in any event, it points to a non-organic explanation from the rocks. But we'll see.
Interesting.
Mars sustained surface water and for a long period of time in its first billion years. Mm-hmm. That surface water would have been conducive to all levels of life. That as we understand it, because Mars and Venus and Mercury and Earth exchanged detritus in the early several hundred million years of our life.
Well, they were saying that they were created at the same time,
right?
Correct?
And so things were flying between them and landing on them. We've got pieces of Mars in Antarctica that we can recover.
Interesting.
And that would have been the same on Mars.
Right.
So if there's life here, I mean, that's just, you know, that's falling off your front door in terms of cosmic distances that would be consistent with either proto-life or early life, archaic life here, would be consistent with what we can find in the geological record of the previous liquid water-covered parts of Mars.
How long do you think before we are people on Mars?
Well, you'll see it.
Humans.
You'll see it in your lifetime.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
That's if I don't kill them first.
There's too much in it. There's too much in it, right. And we've also got a moon race with the Chinese who are hostile to sharing. And we probably have a Martian race, private based.
Musk wants to colonize Mars with rich people.
Challenge you've got when you are worth several billion dollars is, what's the fun?
Right.
Yeah. What am I sitting around for?
Well, not for nothing, John Batchelor. When you get there, you're not going to pick up Channel 2 and Channel 5.
No.
You're not going to watch fantasy football.
But there might be work for us up there.
You never know.
TV stations, radio stations on Mars, you never know.
WMARS.
All Mars will be colonized. Sub-Martian. We have to live underground.
Underground.
Because the atmosphere is not thick enough to protect what we understand to be successful living. Radiation,
meteorites. But then over time, that would also change who we are.
It would change people born on Mars.
Yeah.
Living in 1/6 gravity means that your body requires different different kinds of growth.
Yep.
And also you can live on walls. 1/6 gravity, you don't fall off on a steep incline.
Interesting.
It's very easy to plant yourself,
almost like a Spider-Man.
Right.
Yeah.
We can live hanging from rooftops. And
very interesting.
Well, they'll find us odd. Look
of course.
At that. Good heavens. Yeah. They use wood.
Those people from
Why
Brooklyn.
Were they using wood?
Right. What did you say?
I would just be happy to go to Mars. No Kardashians.
That's a good point. Until the Kardashians are there.
The trip to Mars is challenging as well because we need to be shielded while traveling.
They were actually talking about even entering the atmosphere. There was 3,000 degree heat shield that they had to have.
Right.
No. Oh, wow.
Crazy.
There are engineering details that are not slight about the damage to us.
Oh, yeah. They were even
a journey of 9 months.
When they made it into the atmosphere, you would have thought people would have been kissing each other. I mean, there was a large roar, a large eruption of applause, even when they just went to the Mars atmosphere. It was pretty riveting.
I read a wonderful science fiction story. It must have been 40, 50 years ago. I don't recall it. Someone listening to us will know it, in which it was proposed that people who are special need people, as we say, used to be called disabled, are perfect space travelers.
Really?
Yes, in a zero-G or nearly zero-G environment in which an educated brain is attached to minimal
movements.
Limbs
yeah.
and has needs that can be taken care of in a sealed environment, those are perfect space voyagers.
Interesting.
Because they don't have all of the risks that we have, and they don't ask questions about recovery that we ask.
Right.
Now, that was a science fiction story 40 or 50 years ago. I don't know if that would be consistent with how they're designing space travel today, but you do not need an athlete to live and work on Mars. We're going to be chiefly doing it with robots.
Wow.
And Transferring a human brain is the one thing we don't know how to do, and we don't know how to build a human brain.
Mm-hmm.
So use one that...
But we're apparently cloning and doing the genomes. You saw that story out there?
I read the Chinese story. A lot of problems with it.
Oh, yeah.
Dr. He, the man who's made this announcement, has provided no documentation.
Mm-hmm.
He's a well-known figure who has made statements in the past that are inconsistent with verified facts.
Okay, so you think he's kind of making it up?
I don't know.
Yeah.
It's non-transparent. The sponsoring university, the sponsoring or professional organizations have all taken a step back. There have been condemnations. In addition, he's claiming that he did this in order to create a safe child, or twins in this case, because the father was HIV positive.
Right.
And the fact is that HIV positive is not a threat to children. We have other ways of preventing transfer to the embryo, mm-hmm, that do not require a CRISPR and DNA
splicing.
What he's doing is either cosmetic or there's a suggestion that there's a spectacular here, and that always creates the possibility that we're looking at vanity, not science.
Right.
We'll see. First day. We knew it was coming.
Yeah, for sure.
Right.
Yeah.
And we also know they're experimenting now with removing damaged genes from embryos in the science, mm-hmm, to see if they can help a gene that otherwise would have a defect. However, they haven't made the leap to what they call designer babies,
right,
which I think is still a science fiction concept.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know.
We'll see.
Dr.
He has got the attention he wanted.
Right,
oh,
not
boy.
To be confused with Dr. She.
Yeah,
right,
no.
Exactly.
No. And you probably say it in some clever way, you know. You don't say he, you probably say he or something like that.
That's a good point.
But it's spelled H-E.
H-E, yeah. Amazing. Louis?
I'm just glad you're back. I missed you. I'm glad John's back. I had like three words to say the entire time because I feel like I walk into astronomy class or just, you know, space class, whatever you want to call it.
I read too much. You didn't ask me about Winston Churchill. That's what I've actually been doing.
I interviewed
Andrew Roberts.
Okay.
Within 24 hours, who's the biographer of a new 900-page single-volume biography of Winston Churchill.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a fascination because it takes you through the first half of the 20th century from the point of view of one man who was critical to the success.
Okay. He's in
the
bunkers. Everything's getting bombed. He's watching everything go on.
And what becomes clear is that Winston Churchill from 1915, from the Dardanelles Gallipoli tragedy, which he authored and, mm-hmm, took responsibility for, until 1940 when they called him to be prime minister, he spent every day of his life being bombarded by fake news. Fake news every day. He was the target of derision by the best newspapers, by all the radio correspondents. For a long time, they banned him from the BBC,
yeah,
because they said he was a radical and a reckless person and irresponsible. So I mention that we can think of another political figure who is the target of fake news.
Oh, yeah, yes. a lot going on.
For Winston Churchill, for 25 years, fake news made him prime minister and put him in a position of saving the planet.
Interesting.
So it has uses to be the butt of derision, mm-hmm, by the smart set.
Until you end up on Mars looking for
air. No, we're not going to Mars. Fitness, no, I just mentioned that my Winston Churchill is what I've really been doing. And I've missed you, gentlemen.
No, well, I miss you too.
I've missed all the baseball gossip, and I hope we can do this more regularly.
Of course.
Yes, absolutely.
Now, let me ask you a question, John. So you read a 993-page book.
Yeah.
How many pictures in that book? Couple of pictures, a little
bit.
There
were
pictures. Is there a little bit, like 10 pages in
there?
You get to flip through the pictures a
little
bit?
There were pictures.
I read, but I like pictures.
Well, no.
Give me an illustration.
I'm going to pull seniority on you.
Talk to me.
At my age, books are exciting.
Of course.
Because in comparison to everything else, they don't talk back.
Oh, God.
That is true.
That is fantastic.
You just sit there, and it's what you want it to be. Right?
Your mind takes you away.
Try doing two episodes a week with him.
Can't write it any better. John Bachelor,
thank you so much. Gentlemen.
As always, thank you.
I hope to see you again next week.
Yes, definitely. You will. Absolutely.
Same bat time, same bat channel. Thank you very much, John. John Bachelor, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, God.
Well, he does. He's in, he's out.
He's in and he's out. Take it easy. God. He comes in, drops knowledge. And then just like what's the closing line of the usual suspects? And like a flash, he's gone. Yeah. Well, before he walked in, we were talking about the life of the creator of SpongeBob SquarePants. So let's give him his due before we get out of here.
I can't hear you!
Aye, aye, Captain!
Oh! Who lives in a pineapple under the sea?
SpongeBob SquarePants!
Absorbent and yellow and porous is he?
SpongeBob SquarePants!
If nautical nonsense be something you wish!
SpongeBob SquarePants!
So this guy was pretty successful, no?
Yeah, I think when you create a cartoon for children and children of all ages love it, yeah, I think it's safe to say that he had a pretty successful run as the creator.
57 years old, the guy died.
It's amazing.
It's ridiculous. 57, super, super young.
Super young.
Super young.
You know, we talk about guys like Stan Lee. We talk about other people who pass away at a very late age in life, like Burt Reynolds, even though we thought Burt Reynolds was a very young 82, I believe. Yep. I mean, 57 years old.
That's nothing.
That is
that's
not 20, a
that's
lot
20
of
years from right now. I'm 38.
I know.
It's ridiculous. And for the guy to come out, Steven Hillenburg, right?
Mm-hmm.
For him to create such an amazing show.
Yeah.
And I'll be dead honest with you, I've seen 3 episodes. 3.
I have a lot of younger people in my family
where
who
this is
loved
like their
cartoons,
Star Wars.
And this was exactly.
This was their Sesame Street. This is their Sesame Street, exactly correct.
You know, and you know, Patrick and SpongeBob and
the shell.
The pineapple that they live in, right? Who lives in a pineapple under the sea,
It is in the first line.
But it's that's the anthem for certain children that were probably born in the early 2000s, late 90s, early 2000s. I can't remember when SpongeBob came out, but yeah, I mean, you couldn't go anywhere without a kid holding a SpongeBob doll. And
oh, my God.
There was a SpongeBob float. There's a balloon in the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade.
That's very correct.
So,
chew.
SpongeBob is still popular and it still translates to children.
You know what's amazing to me is this guy, right, that created SpongeBob, started off with a natural resource bachelor's degree. And he went to like Marine Institute, like just that was his passion.
So he created something.
The Ocean Institute.
He created something under the sea that made him lots and lots and lots of money. He didn't die poor. That's one thing I will say.
No.
And I'm sure, unfortunately, ALS. I never met anyone who had ALS, but you see guys like Lou Gehrig, you see guys like Steve Gleason, I believe Tim Green, the former football player, just did a 60 Minutes interview. He has ALS.
ALS is no joke.
It's ooh God.
It's not a good thing. I've seen it. I've just ugh.
Yeah.
I mean, listen, any debilitating disease,
of course, of
horrible.
Course.
But I mean, you look at this guy's life. He created the movie, the SpongeBob SquarePants movie, $140 million. At the box
office. He definitely left his mark.
Monster hit. Yep. You know, we were talking about last week, the creator of Princess Bride.
Yes.
William
Goldman.
William Goldman. And the effect that he had on pop culture, it could be argued that, you know, Steven Hillenburg over here was one of the, you know, kings of his generation.
Mm-hmm.
Because you don't just create SpongeBob SquarePants.
Right.
Like, this is going to be around for our kids.
Yep.
He left his mark.
He left his mark.
Unbelievable. And like I said, not my jam, you know?
We were too old.
Yeah. But it's also amazing to me, it's been dubbed in over 60 languages.
Of course.
And it's hilarious. Obviously, we had just John Batchelor just came in here. John Batchelor goes to Azerbaijan. Mm-hmm. Are you aware of that, where that is? It's the Arab, near the Arab Emirates. So he goes there all the time.
Okay.
So I joke around with him. I call him Azerbaijan Bachelor.
Oh, that's funny. That's funny. But, you know, it's if you think about it, okay, I don't want to say he parallels in the career of another person who died very young at 53 years old, Jim Henson.
Oh, yeah.
Jim Henson created the Muppets. He died at 53 years old from, like, toxic shock syndrome from a case of pneumonia.
Oh, my God.
And I remember it was 1990 and he passed away the same day as Sammy Davis Jr.
Okay.
And I remember him passing away and you just think, "Oh my God," but you know, Jim Henson lives on because you see the Muppets, you see Sesame Street, you see Kermit the Frog, you see everything associated with him, you know? You see movies like Labyrinth, you see other movies like Dark Crystal. I believe that was a Jim Henson movie as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, This guy who created SpongeBob SquarePants, 57 years old, touched the lives of many, 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 many young boys and girls.
Many.
Right, of course. There you go. Young boys and girls. And you know what? That's their first introduction to children's programming.
And even, I don't know if you've ever heard of Rocco's Modern Life.
Mm-mm.
That's apparently a huge thing with the generation right under us.
Okay.
So it's like he worked on that as a director and a writer.
Okay.
On that as well. So it's like he had a, you know, he was EGOTing. You know, he had a whole thing going
right.
on, if you know your 30 Rock. But I don't know. Just amazing. You know, over 250 episodes. It first started airing in 1999, May 1st. So I'm 19 years old when this is going on.
Yep.
And the guy's gone way too soon. But, I mean, he was able to give us an amazing, you know, like I said, 250, nearly 250 episodes.
Yep.
And he's going to be around for so much longer than we are possibly even going to realize.
Sure. We talk about it all the time. People who leave their mark, they never die. That's why when you listen to the radio and you hear Jim Morrison in the Doors, he may be gone, but he's always going to be here. Janis mm-hmm. Joplin, Jimi Hendrix, Kurt Cobain. Mm-hmm. We could go on and on and on. You know, Amy Winehouse.
Yep.
You know, Bradley Cooper's character from A Star Is Born. I'm kidding. But
yeah.
He will always be here.
I'm just waiting for the movie SpongeBob SquarePants on Mars.
That'll happen.
Possible. And you do a prequel because this is like stuff they used to have when water used to be on Mars.
Written and directed by John Batchelor.
Well,
starring John Batchelor.
We just recorded our 24th episode. You believe
it's my favorite number 24. Ken Griffey Jr.
Ken Griffey Jr., exactly.
My man.
Who pretty much coined the backwards hat while you're taking BP.
Sure.
That's
and
his...
Buck Showalter did not like it.
No, hated it.
And hated it.
Pretty
hated
much,
it.
And now he's got to watch every single baseball player take BP with their backwards hat.
Love Ken Griffey Jr. Favorite baseball player of all time.
All time. He's amazing.
Daryl Strawberry, of course, second.
Gary Carter, for me. Gary Carter.
It's weird because like every Met was my favorite Met.
True.
You know, or every saying, Met was like, my favorite player at some point.
I have a coffee table.
Mm-hmm.
I have a Bruce Lee book on my coffee table.
Uh-huh.
I have Gary Carter's autobiography on my, mm-hmm. on my table. And I have Marvel Comics A to Z characters, like a whole dictionary of characters.
Nice.
It's a very, very exciting coffee table, let me tell you.
That is an eclectic coffee table,
very
Kramer.
Eclectic.
It's a coffee table book about coffee tables. And if you don't have a coffee table, it turns into a coffee table. Where's Adam Hanway? We're talking about coffee.
Oh, my God.
We need Adam Hanway.
Six cups of coffee over here.
Oh, boy.
He'll be on again soon. But listen, episode 24 is in the books. We will we'll see you again on Friday morning.
Yes.
For Lou Pellegrino. This is Chris Libertini. Bye?
That sounds good.
Is that what we say? Okay. Yeah. Bye.
We've said it all.
See you at the party, Richter.
Pop Culture Meltdown.
If you'd like to email the show, email popculturemeltdown@gmail.com and find us on Instagram at popculturemeltdown. Find John Batchelor on The John Batchelor Show every weeknight on Westwood One and follow on Twitter at The Batchelor Show. The voice of Pop Culture Meltdown is Dan Kelly, voice talent and one of the best human beings on the planet. For bookings, go to dankellyvo.com. Special thanks to myself, producer Laura Ponte, our graphic designer Ricky Soto, Tim Einkel with OG, and of course, the man, the myth, the legend, Chris Rudzki. This has been Pop Culture Meltdown with your hosts, Chris Libertini and Lou Pellegrino.
They are intelligent. They are smarter than the most up-to-date supercomputers. We cannot underestimate it.